Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We're doing a whole lot of goalie talk on this station, as Derek has already announced a civil war. Joining us now.
Right, the Avengers are here.
Joining the Avengers is our friend Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast and Sportsnet. Elliot, appreciate you for joining us as always. We were kind of going back and forth about what's the best path forward for the Predators in net. Something that I expect we're going to be talking about.
Elliot, we could have a dissertation. We could have a dissertation. We could teach it for a semester at Vanderbilt University, I'm quite sure, and have enough material.
The way we have 6 weeks until the draft.
Like, I know. What are we going to do?
We do have to pace. As Kevin Bieksa says, when we go out, mix in a water.
The good thing is,
we got an NFL schedule release.
That helps.
So we've got some.
Oh, that's right.
We've got some juicy tidbits going on around here.
Vikings coming to town, Elliot. Just throwing it out there. 11/17, November 17th.
Oh, I would love to do that. I would love to do that. I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I heard you guys had the great reveal again.
The Titans social media team kills it. Every single year they absolutely crush it. But of course, the goalie conversation continues, and Willie and I were kind of going back and forth about what's the best path, and if the Predators do decide to trade Uzi Saros, then what's the haul, what's the return that you're looking for? Barry Trotz said, look, knock my socks off. What exactly does that look like? I've said, you know it when you see it, and it's hard to say what the return should be just because trades of this caliber don't happen very often in the NHL. So I'll put you on the spot, General Manager Friedman. What would you need in return for a haul for a potential trade for Uzi Saros?
Well, I think it's the best. I mean, the obvious thing is a score. You're looking for a score, you're looking for a center. I mean, maybe they're the same thing, but that's what you guys are looking for. But the one thing is that, teams are going to throw different things at you. Not everybody who's going to be interested in UC Saros is going to be able to give you that. There's a reason those things are hard to find. So, the one thing I would bet is Barry Trotz and his staff are targeting who's going to be interested in UC Saros. They know who's had interest in him before, and they can look at the playoffs or the end of the season, and they can say, we know who's going to be interested in him now. And they're formulating, okay, our wish list from all those teams. Or maybe we don't know if this team is going to be interested in UC Saros, but they have something that we'd want, so we're going to call them anyway. And, I think number one is going to be a scorer. I don't think there's any doubt about that, or a center. But maybe you see UC Saros as, well, this team's got something else that's not our number one priority, but we like that, and we can take that. Or maybe this team's got a prospect we like, and we can take that. Or, and this isn't always an easy thing to do, I guarantee it's not the preferred option, but you say, you know what, we make a trade with this team, and it frees, and maybe it doesn't look great, but it frees us up to do something else with another team. And those are the options that the Predators really have, and I would bet that they are going through all of them. But number one, first and foremost, is either a center or a scorer.
And as we talk about a potential UC Saros trade, there was some discussion online that I saw from David Paniota, a proposed trade of UC Saros to Toronto in exchange for Mitch Marner. What would you make of that trade?
Well, I can understand why he's proposing it. That's number one. Mm-hmm. From a purely logical, if you were taking a university course and you submitted that as a paper, it would make sense. Like, the logic would dictate that you could do that and you would want to do that. I think there's a couple of things at play here. Number one, and this is going to matter for whatever team is interested in Saros, what's his next contract going to look like? I think that if you're trading for him, that's one of the questions you're asking. You're going to want permission. What does he want? You know, Toronto definitely is looking to solidify its situation and goal. I could see them having interest in Saros. I would be curious to see what they thought would be a fair deal. And Marner absolutely fits for Nashville. He's a scorer. He's a great player. I think the thing that Toronto risks here, and I think they're aware of it, is that, you know, I think if Marner goes somewhere else where it's not as noisy, I think he will thrive and he will be better off for it, and the people of Nashville would benefit from it. And I think he's also pretty tight with Ryan O'Reilly. So I can see that appealing to him, but you've got to sign Marner too, and he wants big dough. You've got to be comfortable with what he wants. But on its face, Carolyn, it makes sense.
So, Elliot, this is another thing that we try to factor in as we lay all this out in the future. As you just mentioned, the next contract, if you want somebody like Marner, you've got to be able to look at the sticker and say $11 million plus. Nashville's never had a guy in that stratosphere, but that's what it would take. And Marner's not perfect, right? But he brings a ton to the table. Just like Saros hasn't been perfect, but he brings a lot to the table. I guess I'll throw it to you this way. With the cap going up for the first time in a few years here, and yeah, it looks like it's going to go up again, the year that Saros' next deal, and Marner's for that matter, will kick in, it's going to be, what, $92 million or something like that. So a lot higher than it's been. So the percentage of what an $8 million contract looks like now is not the same as what we're used to. So can you budget an $8 million goalie and still have the resources, if you're smart, to put a championship roster in front of him? To me, that's the philosophical question.
There's a few ways to answer this, Willie, and that's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to do this as a multi-parter.
Okay.
And the number one, they had meetings with all the agents over the last month, and they told them that you should expect the cap to go up 5% next year, which it is, to about 88, and then you should expect it to go up 5% the year after, which should take it to around 92 and a bit, okay? Mm-hmm. So you're right where you are. The next thing is, for Nashville, you guys are in a really good cap spot. So if you want to, you guys can do a big deal for Saros or a big deal for Marner. When I look up and down your roster, like, just take, let's just assume you're only going to do one of those deals. Okay. Do you guys have cap room, and I'm not looking at your roster right now. Is there anybody due a really big raise anytime soon?
No.
Forsberg's locked in for what, 7 more years, and Yossi's locked in for what, 5 more years?
Right. They have trimmed the fat a lot. The only thing that keeps it from being an absolute home run situation is the price tag for the buyout of Duchesne, the retention of Johansson. They play $11.8 million next year off the top for those two. But in 2 years, in the year that we're looking at is the key year, when the cap is in theory going to be $92-plus million, that bill will be paid. So I think they've set themselves up for a lot of flexibility.
They're in really
there.
Good shape.
Yes.
Because none of your young players, like Novak signed, and none of your young players, I mean, you're going to be looking, if Evangelista keeps going the way he's going, you're going to be looking at something there, but not a backbreaker, I don't think. And none of your young players are really doing mega deals or anything like that. So, yeah, you guys are in pretty good shape. The other thing, too, is, and I'm just talking out of my butt here, so if let's just say it is Marner. I think a lot of people really wonder what the number is going to be. Like, in Toronto, they've pushed their contracts into the stratosphere. Like, I think some people do wonder if Marner goes somewhere else, particularly a tax-free state like Tennessee, if that was to happen, would the number be slightly different? I don't know the answer to that, but it's all part of the equation. You guys are in a really good cap space, though. You guys can do a lot of things. You have a lot of flexibility.
I think a lot of people would love to know here, what do you think the answer is when you hear that Marner, being from the Toronto area, being under the microscope, being maybe a little more sensitive to the noise, How fair do you think that is? Do you buy the theory that somewhere else he could get his game to a next level? Because the rap on him, just kind of like the rap is on Saros, whether it's fair or unfair, haven't had the big playoff moments, right? That's kind of the rap on Marner, right?
I think that's kind of tough on Saros. Like, I really do. I don't think that's fair on him. To me, that guy's given you everything that he can give you. And, you know, that year you didn't have him against Colorado, that was, I would look at that more as what is indicative of what he does as opposed to not winning. Like, I've heard that Saros knock. I think that's crazy.
I agree with you. So I guess, and we have a knowledge base here, but we don't know as much about Marner. So what about the tag on Marner?
I would tell you this about Marner. There is a part of me, and I would say a large part of me, who thinks it will be a shame if he ever plays a game somewhere else. Because that kid's a Toronto kid who plays for the Maple Leafs. He's a really good player, and he loves being a Leaf. And, like, it should work. It should work. Now, I will say this. It takes a special person to survive and thrive in these markets. P.K. Subban could do it. He loved the stage. The Sedin twins could do it in Vancouver. They knew how to block out the noise. I think JT Miller is another guy who I think really understands and gets it, but not everybody can handle it. And I don't even know if it's Marner or some of the people around him, but I just think he's surrounded by negativity, and it affects him. And, yes, he is sensitive. And I think what happens in the playoffs is he feels the pressure, and it crushes him. And because, like, he does not play in the regular season like he plays in the playoffs. He changes. And I hope that someday he figures it out, because I think he will. Like, it's going to be like Nazem Kadri. Nazem Kadri got traded from here because he got suspended twice, and he went to Colorado, and he was a huge part in a team that won a Stanley Cup. The next team that gets Marner is going to really benefit from him. And if I was you guys, I absolutely would be going after him.
Okay, so let's look at another factor, I think, as we hit the summer and they start having these talks with Saros on what is the right market value for him. I looked at three other guys, Elliot. Jake Ottinger, who his team is on the cusp of moving forward. He's a little younger, but he's got 1 year left on his deal. Shesterkin, almost the exact same age as Saros, already makes a little bit more than Saros. We know the Rangers are going to look at his deal this summer. And then Jeremy Swayman, who I heard on your podcast, I forget the term you used, but he's a restricted free agent. Obviously, his stock is skyrocketing right now. What do you think is the ballpark for those guys? Because I think other people will look at Saros and say, well, $8 million for a goalie. There's a lot of goalies. They don't make that much. People are going for lower. But those three guys that I just mentioned are going to get big raises, right?
Yes, they are. Like the thing is, people don't want to pay goalies $8 million until and people say that, you can win with a mediocre goalie. And, you know, some teams have. Like, it is true. You better have a hell of a team. But I think a lot of people say that, Willie, because I don't think there's as many A-level goaltenders as there used to be. Like every team used to have an A-level goalie or close. Like, you know, two-thirds of the league would or three-quarters of the league would. There aren't that many anymore. If you were to do tiers on the A tier, there might be eight guys max. And Saros is one of those guys. And the one thing, look, I think he's going to try to hit a home run. Absolutely he is. It's his last big deal. And his last deal, I think, was a little bit under market. It was a great deal for the Predators. And he's going to try to hit an absolute Grand Slam home run. Now, the one thing I would say is the Predators are probably going to say to him, look, it's Tennessee, there's no state tax, and we can build a winner around you, so we're going to need you to take a little bit less. And Saros can decide if he wants to listen to that or not, but he is going to shoot for a big number. I think we all know that, and so are those other goalies. And, Hellebuck signed for what, 7 times 8.5? I would think that Nashville wouldn't want to go there. I think they would argue taxes and situations should be a little bit less than that. But I wouldn't blame Saros if at the beginning, at least starting a negotiation, he asked for something like that.
we've heard from a lot of Predators fans saying, well, just offer him 4 years. Sounds great.
That's not going to work.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Don't think that's going to work. Elliot Friedman is with us. Elliot, the big story that has really kind of surrounded this franchise, the Predators franchise in its entirety, is the fact that they haven't had that elite premier goal scoring forward. It's not easy
that they've
to
drafted,
find.
Right, because Forsberg would be the one guy that I would say is legit goal scorer, but they traded for him, right, when he was super young.
Yep.
Not a homegrown guy. Obviously, those guys aren't easy to find. And really, for the most part, you find those guys by being terrible and getting lucky enough to get the first pick in the draft. I don't think that's necessarily in the cards for the Predators. How else do you find that guy?
Well, I would. The one thing I think is if you look at one of your hated rivals there, that's currently playing in the second round of the playoffs, everybody's looking at Dallas and what they're doing. Like, if you look at where they drafted Jason Robertson and they drafted Wyatt Johnston, they drafted
and Roope Hintz.
Late first round, second, and Roope Hintz, late first round, second round. So those players are available. You know, one of the things I once talked about with David Poile is that Nashville always built their team goalie out, and the thing is you guys are one of the best at identifying defensemen. And you know, I had this conversation once with Kevin Abrams, who's a longtime manager with the New York Giants of the NFL, and they talked about what organizations are good at. And like, there are times in the NFL, you look at a player drafted and you say, that player's a Patriot, or that player's a Raven, or that player's a Titan. And, you know, and like, for a long time, I think you guys prioritized that, and you were very, very good at it. And I don't want to say that it hurt your ability to draft scoring forwards. And I don't want to say it wasn't something that you were overthought or ignored or anything like that. But I do think that you guys were so good at what you did that you kept on reaching for that. And I think that's one of the things that the Predators have kind of talked about, is what can we do differently to identify some of these scorers and things like that. And so I think you guys always had kind of a type, and you went after a type and you were very successful at it. And now that's one of the things you guys are trying to do, is, okay, we have to start identifying this better. What have we missed out on, and how do we fix it?
We'd love to get your perspective, Elliot, before we let you go, on the Vancouver-Edmonton series. Because here, I think a lot of people are curious to see, all right, you know, there's that whole game you play mentally of, what does it mean that Vancouver is taking Edmonton into the deep water? They defended Edmonton well, so you're looking at Nashville's roster and say, well, they didn't score enough in the playoffs. But Edmonton's having trouble scoring as well, especially relative to them. But what a heck of a series you're having. But what is it like in Canada covering this series?
Oh my God, Willie, it is crazy. it is crazy. Somebody sent me a DM on X yesterday of me making out with an Oilers logo, and like, I sent it to my buddies and they were laughing their heads off. They loved it. Like, all the Canucks fans think I hate them and I'm biased towards the Oilers. All the Oilers fans think I hate them and I'm biased towards the Canucks. Like, this is everything I signed up for. Like, two passionate Canadian markets. They're just, the fans are tearing into each other on social media, everywhere else. Yeah, some of it goes over the line, but most of it is good, clean fun. Like, you can tell the two teams, they just hate each other. I mean, there's so much passion in this. Like, to me, it's such the regret that we don't get more. I know people in Nashville don't care about it, but it's such a regret that we don't get more Canadian series, because, like, by the time this series is over, because I've always thought it's going seven, there's going to be, like, two smoking craters of fan bases here. And, the coaches are, like Chris Knobloch, the Oilers coach, with that huge bet on the backup goalie in game four, and now Tocchet's threatening to play. I don't think he's going to do it. This 19-year-old who has only played six games in North America. It is crazy. It is so awesome, though. It's like pick the Titans' biggest rival going at each other for seven games in a row. Like, you and the other city there, you guys would be tearing into each other. It is It is so fantastic. It is everything that sports is supposed to be.
I'd like to propose the loser of this series just plays an honorable mention just for fun series with the Maple Leafs, just so we can see chaos ensue in Canada.
That would be awesome.
That would be fantastic. Yeah,
you said before the series started, I think, you predicted it to go seven. So yeah. I think that might, from here, because I think we've looked at Edmonton as a contender for the Cup for the last three seasons at least, maybe more. But has it surprised you, because I think the answer is no, at how well Vancouver has defended the Oilers, because it looks very similar that it did against the Predators.
Well, I think also, I think the Oilers have defended at times much better than they get credit for, too. Like, Vancouver set a record for fewest shots on goal through 10 games of a playoff. Like, nobody's had less shots on goal than them. Like, you made them fight for every inch of ice, and now Edmonton's making them fight for every inch of ice. And, you know, what it reminds you of, and it probably goes back to why you were talking about your drafts and things like that. Like, if you can't check, no matter how good you are, you can't win in the playoffs. Unless you are, puck is there, guy on one team versus guy on other team, someone's got to win that battle. Unless you guys are able to win those battles, you can't win it this time of year. And Vancouver and Edmonton, they both have great offensive players, but especially at 5-on-5, they are getting shut down.
Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast in Sportsnet. Elliot, always appreciate you for stopping by. We'll continue more goalie talk next week.
All right, Carolyn. Speak to you later on.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Elliot.